Welcome to Gay Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with renowned LGBTQ authors and up-and-coming talent of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Happy New Year, Justine.
Happy New Year to you, Brad. We finally made it here.
Yes, we finally did. I hope you enjoyed your evening.
I did. We watched the ball drop live at 9, and then that's it. We're done.
Well, we had a New Year's Eve party.
Wow.
Which I know we're not supposed to be in Southern California, but we had a safe New Year's Eve party. All of our friends turned on CNN with Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, which is always fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's the only time of the year Anderson drinks. It's pretty scary.
And he's totally funny when he's with Andy. So we had all of our friends on Skype while we watched the show together.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. That was a lot of fun. We hardly heard any of the show because we kept talking through it. But
yeah,
we kept seeing Andy Cohen laugh. So we knew he said something funny.
Did you hear them talking about the Tiger King?
No, I didn't.
Andy asked Anderson Cooper, he said, so how would you rank his husbands on the scale of hotness? And Anderson Cooper stared at him and said, I am not going to even entertain that.
Well, there was a guy that did the sword swallowing or two, you know,
I missed
tube
that part
underwater. He was able to take this big tube and just really slide it down his throat. And
should we be talking about this on air?
Yes, Andy.
Okay,
we'll finish it up right now. Andy Cohen looked at him and said,
"No, it's like, you know, tubes down his throat. That's golly."
Well, that's where I was going to get to. Andy Cohen turned to Anderson Cooper and said, would you go on a date with that guy? He wasn't the most attractive man, but I think he would be quite popular in West Hollywood.
Oh, yes. And he may well be.
Well, first, the guest today is Michelle Arnold. And it was a very nice conversation. I really enjoyed her. It was very pleasant and we had fun. So
we got turned on to her because I reviewed one of her books, recommended one of her books.
You may be right. You may be right. In fact, I think I told her that in the interview. So she's coming up in the guest. But for our listeners, Justine is not doing a book recommendation this week.
Yeah, I get a week off.
Yeah, I told her, stop what you're reading. Don't do it. And the reason is because we got a lot of New Year's announcements to make. And Justine,
can't wait to hear them. I really haven't heard them this time. I don't have to even pretend to be surprised.
No, I kept them from Justine because I wanted her surprise. So the first thing that's going to change this year is I'm eliminating Justine's segment.
Oh, no.
We're no longer going to do book recommendations.
Oh, no.
Justine,
you're going to fire me on air. Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm not that cruel. I'm giving you a 2-week notice.
No.
Or I could do like Trump and follow you on Twitter. No, yeah. Justine's here to stay. So
good.
As long as she wants to be, she's around. I just needed to throw a curveball at her to begin with.
So you're kidding, right? I can still do my book recommendations, right?
Yes, I am kidding. Justine will be starting the show, as always, with book recommendations. That was just a joke on my half.
Okay. It may have been a sad joke,
but it was a joke. I laughed inside. Okay, now on to the changes. Justine, what is something I've wanted to do with the show that you have battled me on?
Change the name.
Yes. Justine does not want me to change the name. And some other former guests and listeners said I shouldn't change the name. And the reason is I've already established a brand as the Gay Mystery Podcast. We've been doing it for over a year, 66 episodes, I think, now. So they were like, leave well enough alone. Well,
yeah.
I can't do that. I had a boss that told me I make changes for the sake of changes when I change policies.
Yeah.
So the name of the show is going to change. Here it is. May I have a drum roll, please? The new name is Queer Writers of Crime.
Wow. That's quite the switch.
Yes, it is. And for good reason. Okay, let's start. I'm not going to get into any of the controversial issues of the names, but let's just start why I'm using queer. Simply because it is generally associated with gay men. And that's not what the show is always about. And in the past 7 to 8 months, I've made a conservative effort to add more diversity. And we've had more lesbians, people that identify as bisexual, people identify as trans. And I felt like it was doing injustice to them. And a bigger factor is I felt people, listeners, as they go through podcasts, may be skipping our show because they're making the assumption it must be gay men.
Right.
So I just felt, I feel more comfortable with it. I felt it was necessary.
Well, you know, I have a publishing company called Requeered Tales, so it's not like I'm opposed to queer.
Yes. And I will tell you, I talked to some publishing houses and or people that I know that are with publishing houses, because a few of them refer guests to me, and they said queer is what they use. Unless it's very, there's some publishing houses that do strictly lesbian novels and some that do strictly gay men's novels. But the ones that don't find queer is the best to use, and it's become much more common every day.
Yeah.
So that's the first change. The second change is, why in the world didn't I just make it easy and just call it Queer Misty Podcast? Do you know the answer to that? Do you know the answer? The answer to that is, there has been, from the very beginning, people who have questioned, okay, what does your name mean? Does it mean that the crimes are gay novels, or are they gay people writing crime novels? So some people found it very vague, and it was a big deal to them.
Right.
So I figured the best way to do it is to make it very clear so that no one can misunderstand. The show is called Queer Writers of Crime.
Right.
You have to identify in the LGBTQ alphabet to be a guest on the show.
Sounds right. We've had that rule in place for quite some time.
Yeah.
Into the title.
About 8 months. And I will say that even the reason for this is simply because queer people are a marginalized society. We really want to promote ourselves, get more into the publishing industry, make more money, which right now, as a rule, we don't.
Yeah.
So the show is not to block anybody out. It's to promote those that we feel need the additional promotion.
Yeah.
And the reason I changed it to crime is because I've had people reluctant and said I have thrillers and suspense novels. And we've always done thrillers and suspense novels, but the name confused them. So there we have the reason. Queer Writers of Crime.
Tell me this is going to be our last change, Brad.
This will be the last change. I can't imagine ever. This says exactly what the show is. I can't imagine making any additional changes in the future.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll hold you to that.
You hold me to that. Yes.
It's on record.
Yes. Record this if you want to, so you can throw it in my face later. Now, what
first
does that...
episode of 2021?
Well, I think it'd still be called Queer. It'll still be Gay Mystery Podcast. It's
yeah,
gonna
but
take
we know where you're on record. It's the first episode of 2021.
Yes, it is. And so this process of changing over is probably going to take about a month. And here's the thing. Good news for folks. If you subscribe to this show, which a large number of you do, and especially on Apple, but it really doesn't matter what app you use. If you subscribe to the show, you don't have to resubscribe. The show will automatically show up. It'll just have the new name.
Sounds so
that'll be seamless for you. If you can't remember the new web address, you can still go to Gay Mystery Podcast and it'll roll over to the new one, which will be Queer Writers of Crime.
Good.
One message I have to authors who have been on the show, I have noticed that quite a few of them have on their websites or on their blogs links to their past episodes. And once this rolls out, you may want to change those.
But the link will still work, right?
Not now. No, it will not.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So what your link will change to, let's say, Michael Nava, it will be queerwritersofcrime.com/Michael-Nava.
Okay.
So if you have an address out there, post it on your website for people to hear. You'll need to change it. So that's all about the name change.
Phew, that's a lot.
Yes. Moving on.
Moving on.
I said there's going to be a change of format, and I really shouldn't have said that because this is a very slight change in format. The opening of the show has always said that I interview renowned and up-and-coming authors for the show.
Yeah.
That's been true for the most part, but I think we've leaned towards well-known authors.
Right.
And the feedback I've gotten has been equal, which is people like it when I have their favorite author on that are well-known.
Yeah.
And that does help bring in listeners who may stay with the show.
Yeah.
But I've also heard a lot of good comments from book recommendations you have done or when I've interviewed new authors that people really appreciate hearing new blood out there and they're anxious to read the new books.
Yeah, no, that's really great. I mean, we've kind of done that mix and, you know, we do 52 shows a year. There's got to be enough of each one to fill the groups.
Yes. So still be doing, upcoming, I have Marshall Thornton coming up, Gregory Ashe coming up, C.S. Poe coming up, people that their names are known. But in the mix, we're going to have people that may have just got their first novel or have novels that just aren't as well known.
Right.
That's pretty self-explanatory. And the last one.
Oh, dear.
And I'm sorry you can't participate in this, Justine.
Oh, dear.
No, it's nothing bad. It's a review contest.
Ooh, nice.
It's a review contest. It starts immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And will run until January 31st.
Okay.
And what you have to do is go to Apple. And there's two ways to do that. If you have Apple, it's easy. You just go to Apple Podcasts. If you don't have Apple, you have Android or work on Windows, you can go to iTunes, which if you don't have it, you can download it. If you do a review on either of those, they show up on the podcast. They go to the same place.
Yeah.
So if you write a review, the best thing to do is to take a screenshot and send it to the email address that's on the website. If you can't take a screenshot, then at least email or leave a voice message with your username. So that
Sounds
we can, because not everybody's name is their username. The
right.
Same. Okay. So need one of those two. And then the.
Do they get bonus entries if they mention me? No, huh?
They all tend to mention you.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
They like this.
You know, I don't read them because I don't read reviews. And I always recommend that authors do not read their own reviews.
And I don't read my book reviews. You help me with that. But I do read the podcast reviews and they're all good. One guy gave us a 1-star and I have no idea. He didn't leave a comment. So it cannot be a hit and run, which means you put a star and that's all, because there's no record of who left those stars.
Right.
Leave a review, and it doesn't have to be a 5-star review. It doesn't have to be a 4-star review. We are not allowed to ask for good reviews. To be in the contest, you just have to give an honest review.
Well, you know, there's another podcast where they say, give us 5 stars, but you can say anything you want in the review.
Well,
you can tell us how horrible we are.
True. And I'm not going to lie. Justine and I will be ecstatic if you give us a 5-star review, because you know why, Justine?
Why?
We deserve it.
Oh, yeah. or at least we want it.
We want to believe it. And you can help us believe it. So leave the review and send it over, and it takes a while for those to propagate into Apple once you send it. Sometimes they show up in a day, sometimes it can take longer. So it won't be till mid to late February before the winner is announced. All the people in there will go through a randomizer, and then and the computer will select the name. And one caveat, many authors out there will know this happens, where somebody leaves a book review, glowing book review, and Amazon's algorithms say, we believe this person is a friend or family member of the author, and they delete it.
I hate that.
I hate it too, because it's happened to me and I had no clue who these people were.
That's right.
And many authors have a problem with that. Well, Apple does the same thing. So if you leave a review, don't say, I think Justine and Brad are gods. Just,
so they got to keep it. They have to email those, right?
Yes. Okay. Keep it real. Keep it real. Now, what is the prize? The easiest prize is a $50 Amazon gift certificate. And that's what I was going to do. However, Justine and I, especially Justine, have repeatedly said, go to your local bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
To get your books. So your option, when the winner is announced, they will have the option to choose either an Amazon card or a Visa card worth $50.
Wow. Wow.
Hopefully they'll choose the Visa and go to their local store. But that's up to them. And I hate to say it, because of all the complications, this is U.S. only.
Yeah, yeah. Those sweepstakes, you got to do that. Because those other country laws are just hard to navigate.
And I actually, you and I can't actually access. If somebody in the U.K. leaves a review, it's a totally separate area that, or Apple has it. We can't even access it. And then the payment would be very hard. So I'm sorry, this is U.S. only. If you're outside the U.S., which we have quite a few folks, we'd love you to leave a review, but you won't be in the contest. A couple more things, because I'm going way over here. And I had you on here so that I wouldn't be just doing a grocery list. So you're supposed to be saying some witty things, Justine.
I've been saying witty things. Are they not witty?
Okay, yes, you're always witty. Anyway, we've been asking people to leave a message or send something to us on the contact page. An author who was asking to be on the show has never got a message back. And the reason, because the contact page was broken.
So
it's fixed now. If you want to send a message, if you sent a message in the contact page in the past, please send it again. And again, we would love to hear a voicemail. Nobody's used the voicemail yet.
Yeah. Maybe I'll call in and change my voice and pretend to be somebody else.
Yes, that would be fine.
You had to think about that, right? Mm-hmm. Got you back for the one you tried to fire me on air.
Oh, no. Like when I fire you, it'll be a tweet.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Okay.
So finally, to wrap it up, the contact page is there. The voicemail is there. This is the new year. If you would like to hear us do things differently, add to the show. We'd love to hear from it and we will consider it. If not, we'd just love to hear you tell us how wonderful we are.
Or how awful if we
are. Or how awful we are. Yeah. Sometimes those are funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we've gone 7 minutes over the opening segment. So, So, and this isn't your fault, Justine, for a change. I always tell her how long she can talk, and she always goes over because the amount I give her is never nearly enough.
Well, you know, a couple of weeks I kind of stayed within the time limit. You said, "That's it? What? That's it?"
people
who got recommended on those short weeks, you know, I'm sorry, wasn't me.
I've loosened the reins a bit, and she does go a little bit longer, and rightfully so, because it's hard to do a segment on a recommendation in 1 minute, other than I like the book. So that's all. Anything from you, Justine? Any questions?
Oh, no, I have no questions. I'm really looking forward to the contest.
Okay, good. I'm too. I'm anxious to see how many we get, and I'm anxious to see who wins. So now we are ending the segment, and we are going to go to my interview with Michelle Arnold.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, I'll see you next week. And next week, you're going to be allowed to do a recommendation.
Oh, thank goodness. I think I'm going to have a good one for next week.
Hi, this is Brad. Not only do I interview authors, I write novels too. Check out my Mitchell Riley mystery series on my website, bradshreve.com. My guest, Michelle Arnold, grew up in the Midwest, graduating from the University of Illinois in 2004. She's been making up stories for as long as she can remember and began writing them down sporadically when she was only 6 years old. She currently lives in Illinois with her cat and works in special education. All of her books feature lesbians and bisexual women in leading roles. Welcome to the show, Michelle. I'm happy to have you on.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're first going to start by talking about Michelle.
Okay. We're
going to talk about you. You say you began writing stories around the age of six. Mm-hmm. What, pray tell, were your stories at that age?
Pretty much nonsense. They would be about a page long, and they would be about two sisters who explored a cave or something like that, but not very much happened. I still have an old notebook that I would write stories in when I was like 6 or 7. And you could tell that I read a lot of books because I would use phrases that 6-year-olds don't normally use. Like, and with that, she ran out of the room. But they were pretty short. My attention span wasn't that long, I guess.
That's awesome. You still have that book, though. I bet it's fun to go back and look at it.
Yeah.
Now, do you recall your earliest memories of books that you love that may have inspired you to start writing at such an early age?
Around that age, I was a huge fan of the Ramona Quimby books. I remember my teacher reading them, and I really identified with Ramona because she never quite felt like she fit in, and she always had her own ideas about things. And I think hearing those books made me want to write stuff down.
Boy, at that age, I think I was still on Dr. Seuss. But in my defense, I really admired Dr. Seuss, and I wanted, I think, to write like Dr. Seuss. I wanted to write children's stories. So yeah. I think I stuck with children's stories for quite a while, especially like Where the Wild Things Are was one of my favorite.
Yeah. I love those too, but I don't think I ever felt I could write in that style.
Well, it's definitely totally different.
Yeah.
Well, I first wanted to be a cartoonist, and that probably comes from that whole background. And when I was learning how to do cartoons, I found I was enjoying the story part of it and developing characters than the actual artwork. That's why I headed towards writing. When did you become more serious about writing stories?
When I was about 17. So I had been making up stories for as long as I could remember. And I would tell them to friends sometimes. Like, I made up the story where this happens and blah, 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 blah. But I'd sort of reached an age where people thought that was weird. Like, you didn't just sit people down and say, hey, you want to hear the story I made up? So I thought, if I want other people to know about my stories, I'm going to have to start writing them down. So I started typing up short stories and then emailing them to my friends so I could say, hey, I wrote this story. And then it didn't seem weird anymore when it was written down. So once I started doing that, I started writing longer and longer stories. And I was 18 when I started writing my first novel, which I did not finish. And that's okay, because it was not very good. But it gave me practice with sitting down and writing something longer.
Well, so let me get this right. When you were 17, you weren't writing the stories first. You were telling your friends stories.
17 is when I started actually typing them up, writing them down and organizing them and then showing them to people. Prior to that age, I've been mostly telling stories to people because I just didn't really have the patience to write them down, I guess.
Hey, storytelling's an art.
Yeah.
It is an art of its own. Okay, so 17-year-old, I'm going to take a guess here. Was there a lot of teenage angst involved?
Not really. I actually would write about adults and what I imagined being an adult would be like, which was not extraordinarily realistic. But and also, I wasn't out yet. And I wanted to tell love stories, but they were straight love stories. But they were even more unrealistic because of that, because the men were like women who with men's names. But
other than that, did you feel kind of a disconnect in writing male female romance?
I don't think so, because I think I saw it as something I would grow into, which I think is why I made the characters older than me, because I love the idea of romance, but I did not want a boyfriend, and I just wasn't ready to recognize what that meant, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I saw it as something that would work out when I got older. So that was why I wrote older characters, I think. And they would always fall in love in some weird and silly way.
Well, I normally don't ask this question, but based on what you said, you have me curious. When did you actually come out?
In college. So only a few years later.
Not too much longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking to a guy who, I'm sure, I'm dramatically older than you. I didn't come out till I was 35.
Yeah.
Now, you've written 9 novels, and 5 that are romance and 4 that are part of your mystery series. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the types of women you like to write about.
I like women who have some sort of trauma in their past that they've had to overcome, because I think it gives the characters more depth, but it also, in my opinion, if somebody has some sort of vulnerability, but they learn how to face it, that they seem like a stronger character because of that. Either in the story or before the story, they will face some sort of trauma that they have to learn how to overcome. And they're intelligent women, because I value intelligence, but they're not necessarily book smart. Some of them are more street smart.
That's always fun.
Yeah. And some, I identify as lesbian, but some of my characters are bisexual, because I mean, I know people who are bisexual, and they're always saying, why aren't there more bisexual women in fiction? So I thought, why not make some of the characters bi? It's not that big of a deal. So
I don't like to check off boxes, but I do try to seek out people that write bisexual stories, because they aren't very common.
Yeah.
And so when I find somebody that does write bisexual stories or is bisexual and they want to be on the show, I'm always very excited.
Yeah.
Your first two published novels were romances. And then you began your Amy Sadler mystery series. What compelled you to start writing mysteries?
It was kind of random, because that was something I thought I would never do. I actually had gone through a long illness, during which I spent a lot of time watching DVDs. I watched a lot of Criminal Minds. I watched some Rizzoli and Isles and various other crime-solving shows, because, I mean, I've always liked watching those shows, but I never really thought of writing something like that. And there was one night I could not sleep, because I wasn't feeling well. And so I was kind of up feeling tortured anyway. And this idea just popped into my head of a serial killer carves tally marks into his victims. I mean, it's really gruesome. And I'd obviously been watching entirely too much Criminal Minds to think of something like that. But it was just such a disturbing idea that I started thinking, why is he doing that? And so I started exploring this idea in my mind. And then I actually hadn't written anything in months, because I had been so unwell that I just couldn't focus on that. And this idea, once it took hold in my brain, I could not stop thinking about it. So I started writing it down, and it ended up turning into a whole story. And somehow I got a 4-book series out of that. So
isn't it great when you get those ideas though, and they just won't let go?
Yeah.
Kind of like when your characters decide they're going to do what they want to do and not what you want to do.
Yeah. The best ideas are like that.
Sometimes that pisses you off a little bit.
Yeah.
Other times they know better than you do.
Yeah.
I see where Criminal Minds would come into play. Are there any mystery novels that you may have read when you were younger or later on that grabbed your interest?
I don't think so, because I really don't read a lot of mystery. It's more the TV shows. It's just not something I've been interested in reading. I think part of it is a lot of mystery novels don't seem to develop the characters as much, because they're more focused on the plot. And I think most readers, that's what they're interested in, is seeing the plot unfold. But I've always been very interested in characters and exploring them and what motivates them and things like that. So I don't know. I could never really get into the mystery genre as much. I know there are a lot of mystery authors who actually have very colorful and interesting characters. So I'm not knocking mystery authors by any means, but there are just other genres that delve deeper into characters usually. And those are what I normally read. And I guess it just never bothered me as much on the TV shows.
Yeah. Well, we haven't gotten into the detail yet on your novels. I know that you do delve more into the character. And I think you'd be surprised. It used to be that the story was mainly on the puzzle. Here's the puzzle, let's fix it. And more now, there's a real blend. People don't want to just have the crime solved. They want to get to know protagonist and that sort of thing. So a lot of people are in the same frame of mind.
Yeah.
So along those lines, who is Amy Sadler? What makes her tick?
She's a very driven person. She's someone who, her father was a firefighter and was killed in the line of duty. And the community praised him as a hero, but he actually hadn't been a very good husband and father at home. So she's sort of driven to go into public service like him, but actually be the good person both at work and at home. So she ended up becoming a police officer, which is probably the last thing a firefighter wants his daughter to become. But
yeah,
there's a bit of a rivalry there, and became a detective so she could solve crimes. She originally worked in sex crimes and had a reputation for being really good with victims, making them feel comfortable and getting them to talk. But after an extremely traumatic experience at work where she was let down by her own partner, she ended up transferring to homicide. So now she's solving murders, and she's sort of at the beginning kind of married to the job, but she's still very close to her family, to her widowed mother, and she's kind of afraid of letting her family down, I guess. She feels like they've already been let down by her dad, and so as a result, she's been in the closet as a lesbian. So on the one hand, she's this really bold, brash, get the job done kind of woman. But on the other hand, there's this big part of herself that she's kept secret. And when it comes to Lyra, she is extremely protective. I mean, really all of her loved ones, but Lyra is the person she loves the most. So.
And we're going to talk about Lyra in a bit. Just the listeners know that is Amy Sadler's love interest.
Yeah.
And we're going to bring her up in a moment. So you talked about her solving sex crimes. Are mm-hmm. you a fan of at all of Law and Order SVU?
Oh, yes. That's another one I watch a lot.
Yeah, I generally have not been a fan of the Law and Order series, but that one I haven't watched in ages. I don't even know if it's still on, but I used to really love that show.
Yeah, it's still going. Yeah, so Amy Sadler does have a little bit of Olivia Benson in her.
Would you and Amy make good friends?
Probably. I mean, I wrote her and I like her a lot, so I guess so, but I don't know if she would like me because we don't have a lot in common.
And why would you say that?
Because I'm more of a quiet, staying at home type of person, and she's out doing, you know, brave things that I couldn't imagine doing. But then again, her love interest is more of the quieter, more reserved person, so maybe we would be good friends.
I really like my protagonist, but I don't think we would get along at all. Amy first appeared in Out of Shadows. That's the first in the Amy Sadler series. What's that story?
In that story, there's a serial killer who abducts women and keeps them for a few months and then kills them and dumps the body. And when they find them, they're always covered in tally marks that are carved into their skin. So it's kind of a really disturbing, gruesome crime. And it's frustrating for Amy because takes the next victim within days of dumping the last one. So it's obvious that he's picked out the next person already when he decides to discard the one he has. So she's frustrated because someone will disappear under similar circumstances. And she knows that it's got to be the same guy. She doesn't want to be pulling this one out of the dumpster. So she's trying to figure out how to stop him in time, but he's good. He's really smart and he's not leaving enough clues. And then I don't want to give it away, but there's a twist in the middle where the case becomes extra personal for Amy.
Well, it sounds delightfully gruesome.
Yeah.
I like those a lot. A lot of people don't like the movie Seven, and I absolutely loved it. Without giving too much away, of course, tell us about the Amy Sadler series, the overall arc?
The common arc is the romance between Amy and Lyra, which is progressing through time. It sort of goes over a period of a few years. So you see them at different stages of their relationship, from, you know, just admitting their feelings for each other to being a more established couple and so on. So that's basically the constant that is going throughout the series. Each book has a separate mystery, and they're usually not connected. Three out of the four feature serial killers. It's a lot easier to keep the story going for the whole book if there's more than one victim. But one of them, the third book in the series, actually does have several connected murders, but no two people are killed by the same victim or the same killer, I think. So that one I managed to do something a little different with. And there's also Lyra's backstory that gets developed a little, because she had kind of an unusual childhood and her mother was always very mysterious. And over the course of the series, she starts to find out why that was. So we get to explore that.
What do you find more difficult to write, mystery or romance?
Probably mystery, because it's not what I have normally done, I guess, because I've written romance for years and I continue to write it. But the mystery was kind of unexpected. Like I said, it just sort of popped up in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep. So, and it took a lot more research to try to make it. I wanted to make it a little more realistic than television. I know that most readers are more concerned about the story than they are with if every tiny detail of investigating the crime is exactly like in real life, especially since real life doesn't always make a good story. But I did want to be more realistic than television, so I did have a lot of research to do.
And getting to that, Amy is a police detective, so she works for the police department, and Lyra is a forensic pathologist. Mm-hmm. How much research was required to write those characters?
I mostly did internet research. I know some people are very hands-on with actually calling the local morgue and saying, can I visit or whatever. I didn't mm-hmm. go that far, but I did have to read a lot of interesting articles. And I found a few books that are written for authors about forensic pathology and things like that. I remember my YouTube history getting a little weird because I was watching like morgue tours and stuff like that. The process of an autopsy without actually showing an autopsy, because I don't think I could stomach that.
Well, I think with the internet, it makes it much less of a requirement to do a one-on-one interview. Everything's there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can find out. And after doing like an insane amount of research and asking people about police procedure and things like that, and finding out that it can vary wildly from one place to another, even one town to another, I decided that I was going to invent a fictional city for the series to take place in, so nobody could tell me. If I said it was set in Philadelphia, for instance, I knew somebody was going to write a letter saying, I live in Philadelphia and this is not how the police there do things. So I wanted to make a fictional city so I could say, well, guess what? In this city, this is how they do things.
Smart move. Because I live in LA, but I was writing about a neighborhood that is pretty distant from where I live now, but I knew very well. And through Google Maps, I learned it had changed dramatically, and I was really grateful I pulled it up. And so I drove over there, and it was not the same neighborhood in any way that I recalled. So writing about a different city from recollection can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most intriguing thing you've learned in your research?
Well, I saw this interview with morgue technicians where they were talking about all the cataloging they have to do and everything like that when they get a dead body. And whoever was doing the interview asked them, doesn't it get depressing looking at dead people every day? And they said, no, it makes you appreciate life more because you see how quickly it can be taken away. And I thought that was really interesting because I think it's sort of contrary to what people would assume about morgue workers. And so I kind of put that into Lyra's character, that she's actually this not overly upbeat, but she's kind of a sunny person who loves life, and she's an optimist, and you know, she spends her days cutting open dead people. And I wrote in a scene where someone said to her, how do you do this? How are you such a cheerful person when you cut open dead people all the time? She's like, it just makes me appreciate life more. And I thought that was a really interesting take on it.
So not that cold stereotype of just an individual that almost has no feeling.
Yeah. Like it would, it actually, like it doesn't make you unfeeling to work with dead people, I guess, but like people would assume it can be exactly the opposite. It can make you more compassionate because you've seen people who died in gruesome ways and things like that. And pathologists like her, their job is to speak for the dead, to figure out their secrets and what happened to them. So actually it's a pretty important job. And I don't think it would be a good job for an unfeeling person.
I like that perspective. That's interesting. Let's talk more about Amy and Lyra. Can you tell us about the relationship?
Yeah. So they kind of balance each other out because they have very different perspectives on life, because Amy's the one tracking down the perps. So she kind of has a little bit more cynical of a view of the world. Lyra spends her time with the victims. So she's always thinking from that perspective, and she's sort of just a calm, reflective, thoughtful person. So she's kind of the person who calms Amy down at the end of the day when Amy's, you know, had a horrible day of interviewing people and talking about horrible murders and stuff like that. Lyra's the person that she can go to and just talk about whatever. And it takes her mind off of things because Lyra's always able to keep things in perspective and to stay positive. So she kind of means the world to Amy because of that. And Amy's consequently very protective over her. Partly, I think it's just a natural thing because Amy actually knows how to physically defend herself. That's something she does in the line of her work. And Lyra obviously wouldn't need to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a sense that she's more able to physically defend her. But she also has this sense that she sees Lyra as being more pure. I think she hasn't had to deal with all the unpleasant people that Amy has had to deal with in her job, since most of the people she deals with are dead. So she doesn't really know what they're like.
They aren't so unpleasant anymore.
Yeah, she can imagine they're all very nice people. And I think she doesn't want that ruined for her. She doesn't want Lyra to take on a more cynical view of the world. She wants to protect the way she sees things.
Other than the romance, you kind of touched on this a little bit. Actually, how much time has passed from book one to book four?
A few years. I think it has to have been at least 3 years from book one to book four.
Okay, so back to the question I was getting at. Other than her romance, in what other ways has Amy changed?
Well, she's definitely become more domestic outside of the job. They end up deciding to have a family. So she's, you know, thinking about things like that, children and so on. And it does sort of change her, because part of it is she feels like she has so much more to lose now, because she has not only Lyra, but also the children, and she feels the need to protect all of them. She's the cop, so she feels like she should be the protector. But it also gives her more of a focus outside of work, and something to think about, you know, that's a lot more innocent, like trying to make the world a better place by raising better people, I guess.
So it sounds like she has more balance in her life now.
Yeah.
Amy's last appearance was in A World of Demons. Mm-hmm. That was published in 2018. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Can we expect to see more of her?
I'm not sure yet. I left the ending of that book open so that there could be another book. They're still in the same jobs, doing the same stuff. So I didn't want to put limits on it. I wanted it to always be where if I had another idea for an Amy Sadler book, I would be able to continue it. But right now, the ideas coming to me just aren't for that. So, and I don't want to force anything. So I've left it open where I can add to it in the future. And I'm sort of hoping that I will get some sort of brilliant idea in the future so that I can do more with them. I did, I have a short story collection out called She Loves Me, where I included three just for fun stories. They're not mystery stories at all, that sort of showed Amy and Lyra in the future, like a few years after A World of Demons, just with their family life. So people could get a glimpse into what they might be doing after the last book in the series. But it's nothing that would be too spoilery that would prevent me from doing whatever I want to do with a future mystery book.
So you left it open, but not a cliffhanger.
Yeah, no cliffhanger. I actually did not end any of them with cliffhangers because I hate it when people do that.
I adore you. I absolutely hate a story with a novel with a cliffhanger. I feel ripped off.
Yeah, I don't mind it if I already have the next book already, but if you have to wait for the next one to come out. So, and I always had this fear, even though I had the basic idea of all four books outlined before I wrote the final draft of Out of the Shadows. I knew that I wanted to do four books, but I always had this fear, like, what if something happens and I never get to publish the next book? I did not want to leave people hanging. So in each book, I wrapped up the storyline for that particular book.
Well, good on you for that. So you're an author by night, but by day, you're a special education paraprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
What attracted you to that profession?
I just sort of landed in it, I think. I studied education in college, planning to be a teacher, and graduated at a time where there were very few teacher openings in my area. So I had to find something to do in the meantime, because I wasn't interested in moving to North Carolina, which apparently is where they were looking for teachers. Mainly, they weren't looking for them in Illinois. So I ended up working as a TA, thinking it would just be temporary work. And I got a phone call from a place I hadn't even applied to within the system that I was applying in, asking if I wanted to interview for a self-contained classroom for high schoolers with autism. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. I've never worked with high school. And they offered me the job anyway. And I started working there and I absolutely loved it. And I actually loved it so much that I decided I was just going to stick with this line of work because unlike with being a classroom teacher, granted the pay is not nearly as good, but you get to leave at the end of the day and not spend your entire evening planning what's going to happen tomorrow, which meant that I had time to go to work, earn a living, then go home and write books. So it kind of gave me the balance that I wanted. And the work during the day is really important and meaningful. I'm not in the same school that I started out in, but I'm still working with special education students with different disabilities. And I love working with them. Like every day I look forward to seeing the kids, currently on Zoom, but still seeing them. And I feel like the time I spend interacting with them, it just puts so many ideas in my head because they have so many stories of their own. And I guess even though not a lot of that makes its way into my own stories, it gets the brain ticking. So my days are full with that. And then I get to go home and work my other job.
You define yourself as a nerd.
Uh-huh.
Convince us.
Well, I have a life-size cardboard cutout of the Doctor from Doctor Who and an autographed Carrie Fisher portrait in my house.
Doctor Who cutout.
Uh-huh.
You could have stopped there. But I want to know more.
Well, the Doctor Who cutout was a Christmas present a friend sent me this year because she knows what a huge fan I am of the show. And she was so excited. She actually texted me with a picture saying, this is what you're getting for Christmas this year. So it wasn't even a surprise. But and I thought she was joking, but she was not joking. So I do have a life-size cardboard cutout of Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor living in my house now.
Well, and I love the Carrie Fisher autograph. Just so you know, I am a mega Carrie Fisher fan for many different reasons. Considering your nerd standing, have you considered writing sci-fi or fantasy?
I am actually working on a fantasy novel. I can't give you an estimate for when it will be out because I feel like I've been working on it half my life. I am making progress, good progress. And I think it will be something that I'm proud of, but it's definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. It's a million times harder than writing mystery. And I love fantasy. I read a lot of fantasy. I watch a lot of fantasy. So it's not it's not that the genre is unusual to me. It's just that inventing your own world is an insane amount of work.
And that's right. There are certain rules within fantasy that are kind of a given, but for the most part, you're given a blank slate. So on the one hand, that makes it easy to create the world building, but the world building itself is a tremendous amount of work, I presume.
Yeah. Especially since I decided to set it almost exclusively in another world. There are two characters who go to that world from this world. So you see our world in one chapter. And other than that, it's entirely in the other world that I've made up. I couldn't just make it simple like Narnia and just pick a particular part of the world to set it in. Instead, I invented different countries, and some of them are at war with each other, and they all have different cultures and religions, and it's just really, really complicated. And I love it. I absolutely love the story. It's something that's has come to me in a series of dreams and just random ideas that I had. And so it feels like something really important, but it's just taking a while to get it all out there. And I just keep thinking I am in way over my head. But
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And to remind the listeners, this is Michelle Arnold, and she's author of the Amy Sadler mystery romance series. And your first novel in the series is Out of Shadows. I'll have a link to your website as well as some other things in the show notes.
Sounds good.
It's been a pleasure to have you on.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show, so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.